Welcome to another episode of the One For You podcast. Today we're joining some enterprising strippers as they try to make do by expanding their business model in Hustlers. Then we go on a magical journey with a bandit in today's gem,
The Fall by Tarsem Singh.
As you can hear today, I, Olivia Chinameo, am joined by a guest, one Manzi Tiwari.
Hello, I'm Hello. Back again. Thank you so much for having me back.
Well, thank you for coming.
I'm very excited.
Yes. It's been a while since the two of us have done this together, right?
That's true. There's been like two moves in between.
Yeah, at least. That was for, what was it? It was for The Death of Stalin, right?
Oh, yes. The Death of Stalin and Marie Antoinette, right?
Oh, yes. True.
Great historical film combination.
Yes, that was quite excellent. Let's see, maybe we can do one better today.
I'm sure top that.
It will be brilliant. So in the meantime, apart from moving, have you seen any films that you want to talk about before we get into it?
I recently saw Noah Baumbach's Marriage Story, which I thought was really, really excellent. And I cried like a little baby. Ugly crying, I'm saying. It's an excellent script, I think. And, you know, simplicity, but done to perfection.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I love it. It's an excellent film. And yeah, if you haven't seen it, go to Netflix. Or even better, if it's available wherever you live, go to the cinema. But it's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry. I do think that the cinema made a difference. I would not have enjoyed it as much on a smaller screen.
You think so?
I think so.
Even though, like you say, it's like what you appreciate about it is not necessarily like the cinematic quality, but more like we were really into the script, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But I feel the fact that you had such a big screen drove everything else out of your mind.
Yeah.
And because it's so simple, perhaps if it's a smaller screen, you'd be more easily distracted.
Possible. I mean, I saw a film that recently that's like definitely made for the big screen. I was like, yeah, what should I watch? Oh, I'll give White House Down another chance. It's this film by Roland Emmerich. And it came out the same year as Olympus Has Fallen. So there were two films where the White House is under attack. I think this one was the more fun one. I don't think I saw the other one, but this one was the more fun one anyway. It's with Channing Tatum as a wannabe Secret Service agent and Jamie Foxx as the president, and, you know, terrorists come in, they get the White House to get the president, and Channing Tatum has to save him. And it's, you know, it's okay. It's okay. It's not offensive, so that's a good start. It's fine, I think. So, you know, there's that.
I guess you know what they say, you make one film about something in a year. Interesting, you make two, points at a deeper issues can't seem to resolve.
Yeah, I guess there's something like that. And also, you know, when there was, what was there? Deep Impact in Armageddon or Mirror Mirror and The Huntsman.
Right, yeah.
Snow White and The Huntsman, yeah. So, interesting. Something to think about. Anyway, while you're thinking about that, we're going to be talking about Hustlers, which is our new release. It is a film that was directed by Laureen Scafaria, who had previously done for the big screen Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. She's also a writer, the writer of the film, and it's based on an article by Jessica Pressler for the New York Magazine. And it's basically about a group of strippers. The main character, I would say, is Destiny, played by Constance Wu, of Crazy Rich Asians fame. And she works as a stripper in New York, but she's not very successful until she meets Ramona, played by Jennifer Lopez, who takes her on her wing. And they make a lot of money until the financial crash of 2008, as most of their clients are basically, Wall Street bankers. So they have less money to spend, so they don't go to strip clubs anymore. So they have to change their business model, and they sort of become promoters of getting the men into the clubs, and then making them spend a lot of money by getting them drunk and drugged, basically. Yeah, I think that's not a spoiler. I think this is all in the trailer, right?
Based on a real life story.
What did you think about this?
So I went in not knowing anything about the film. I hadn't even watched a trailer or read a description. So I would say I enjoyed it a lot, but I would have liked to see a little bit more.
In terms of?
I think one of the main things that bothered me a little was I couldn't really see how the friendship set up between the Destiny character and Ramona, what their basis was and why they cared about each other so much. And so the whole film sort of left me wanting to see a little bit more of why they care and why they bond together.
Ah, really? Because I thought that was actually not... I thought that was really nicely done, because, like, a lot of people speak of the introduction of Ramona, like the Jennifer Lopez character, you know, the moment where she has this scene on the pole and she does this dance and everyone is like, this is the best entrance ever and blah, blah, blah. But I think actually the perfect moment to introduce this character is actually like right after that, when she's like on the roof, I think, of the strip club, and she's still wearing her skimpy costume and she's wearing this fur coat and she's sort of hanging out, lounging on the roof, and she's smoking, you know, and that's like boom, glamour. And then Destiny comes up and it's all like, oh, hi, hey. And then she literally like takes her under her coat, you know, into this. And like, I think this is a very beautiful image. And I actually think I did believe their, for me, that was something that I did believe in, like their friendship, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot of what the film is about, these women, you know, grouping together in a way, you know, because I guess like most strippers are women, and it was this space that they had created for them, which, you know, they strip because they need the money and they strip and they're not ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. So I think that's also a big part of the film, because sometimes strippers are seen with disdain, and this film does not do this. And it's also not leering, I would say.
No, I agree. I think visually it was really, really beautiful to watch. And the entrance was indeed, you know, mind-bogglingly something else. I guess the fact that the visuals were so strong made me think that structurally I would have, because it's based on a true story, I think you could have added some more tension
mm-hmm.
to it. I really felt the second half caught me a little bit more than the first one did. I don't know how you felt about this.
I mean, in a way, the first half is really a lot of setup for something that you know is coming, right? Because we know that what the meat of the story is the way that they fleeced all of these Wall Street guys. And that only comes in the second half. And you're right, it's a lot of setup in a way.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think in a way that was the fun part. It was the fun part, because afterwards, I mean, they're dealing with harsh economic realities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like single mothers that have to find a way to make money. And if they're working minimum wage jobs, you know, where they're not flexible, where they, you know, can't just run out and take care of their kid. And they say, you know, with stripping, I make more money and I am more flexible. And this is a way of surviving.
I think that's something I really appreciated, was for once to have a film about the financial crash that focused on the other side and
yeah.
not necessarily putting finance and bankers center stage, but as yeah. a sort of byproduct, but also a driver of the whole business that they depend on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Because these are the guys who have the money and are willing to spend it. And if they're not there anymore, yeah, the clubs are empty. Yeah, so, I mean, like we said, it's based on this article, and the journalist character also finds her way into it. It's like Destiny is telling her story to the journalist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that was that added anything to the story?
I think it was a very simple way out for some of the issues, and I had expected. So this is something that I was getting at with the story structure. I feel for the first half, I wasn't really expecting where this was going to go, so I wasn't expecting the fleecing story to come up.
Oh,
so in my mind, I feel maybe if they had included one of the police interviews as a frame at first,
yeah.
it makes more sense to see where this is all going. So I think maybe for me, the potential of using the journalist was lacking a little.
Okay, yeah. She was played by Julia Stiles, and it was like a tiny role. And I don't know if it, you know, it's, I think it was also intended to sort of give Destiny like a way of reflecting and, you know, see if how she thinks about it now. But I don't think they did a lot with it. It wasn't, you know, maybe could have spent that, you know, maybe, you know, like you said, if you didn't feel the friendship, more on their friendship, you know, to flesh that out a little bit. But yeah, so I don't think that added a lot. But I do have one question, because a lot of the discourse about this film has been about how it's empowering, etc. And we're also, you know, we've also talked about this now, and there are certainly aspects of this. But I also feel like, because the victims are bankers, and like they say in the film, like everybody hates the bankers, that, you know, the parallels in the way that they are treating them to, you know, how women sometimes are victimized aren't really acknowledged in a way. And it's like, oh, it's not so bad. They're bankers. They're immoral anyway. And they have the money. So, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think they were belittled and made fun of for their story when they did come forward with them. And it was embarrassing to be put in that position. But I think they could have maybe explored this power dynamic a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, I understand. And like you said, it's good to see this story from someone else's point of view. But, you know, that it's like, oh, it's not. Yeah. In a way that the film has, I don't know, like victims that are, you know, oh, they deserve it. And that's, of course, victim blaming in a way that we try not to do usually. Right. Mm. I feel. I don't know.
Yeah. So I feel it was a very entertaining film. But it was more surface than I would have liked it to be, especially considering the topics that it does touch upon are incredibly relevant and not told or talked about as much.
Yeah. I mean, I felt entertained, but I don't think it was a great film. And I was also expecting more because it's been out in other territories for a while and people were like, wow, this is great. This is an excellent film. I'm not saying it's not good, but I don't see
the hype.
Yes, in a way. So I guess one for us, you know, as like go see
as a casual cinema. Why not?
Okay. So let's move on to our jam session, where, as always, there will be spoilers. And today we'll be talking about The Fall by Tarsim Singh, which is a film that I've always wanted to watch. So thank you for bringing that along. So maybe you can tell us about the film and why you wanted to watch it again.
Of course. I mean, I don't really need any excuse to rewatch this film. I really, really enjoy it. And I've been thinking about it a lot recently because I was trying to finagle it into a paper of mine. Didn't end up working, but, you know, worth the rewatch. Tarsim Singh's film is about a little girl who falls picking oranges in an orchard and is put into a hospital in early 20th century Los Angeles, I think. And she meets Roy, played by Lee Pace, who is a stuntman who's also fallen filming his first stunt. And basically what they do is start telling each other a very epic and beautiful story.
So that's I would say that's the basic setup, yes. because in a way, like, it's, and it has this whole fairy tale aspect. On the one hand, of course, because you see the story that they tell each other, or the story that they're telling is sort of, it comes alive on screen, right? And it's this fairy tale in a way, and lots of fairy tale logic in it. But I think that also extends a little bit to the reality in a way, because it's this typical, she's like just this child, and she's left roaming the hospital, and everybody knows her, and she just hops into this stranger's bed and's like, hello. And he's like, okay, our guests, I will tell you a story now. And that sounds all very nice and, you know, cute and everything, but it's has a very dark core, I would say, because he's telling her the story because he wants to manipulate her, because he wants her to do something for him, namely get him morphine because he wants to kill himself. And I was like, what is happening, man? This is dark. You can't use the kid to kill yourself. I mean,
yeah, I think that's something that really draws me to the stories. At the same time, it makes me feel a lot like a child. And you really experience the story with sort of the childhood wonder of when you experience something magical or something epic for the first time. But at the same time, as an adult, you pick up on the sort of implicit darker background that all of the story is feeding on. And it just makes it so much more painful, but also more endearing to watch.
Yeah, in a way, it's like about she's saving him by listening to the stories and by believing in the stories and by sort of believing in him, because she doesn't want him to die, just like she doesn't want the characters in the story to die. And yeah, so... And I like it. It's because it's a blending of two imaginations that you see on the screen, because he tells the story, but she, I think we sort of see her, well, also his, but also her visualization of it. So the characters in the story are people that she knows from around the hospital. So you have Roy, played by Lee Pace. Have we mentioned this? This is also important, I feel.
It's very important.
Yes.
The eyebrows, I tell you. Acting.
Yeah. Young Lee Pace, because this film came out in 2006 and I think they shot for a long time, actually. Yeah. Anyway, so Roy is the masked bandit. And then you have a guy who brings the ice in the hospital. He is, what's his name?
Ex-slave, right?
Yeah, Otto Denga, I think. Yes. And then you have Charles Darwin, who's an orderly in real life. And you have the Indian, who's an orange picker. And here I love this. It's one of the little twists that I love because he talks about the Indian. And you see him and he's an Indian. And then he says, you know, and his wigwam and his squaw. And you're like, oh. But what you see is an actual Indian person, not a Native American. So in a way showing, you know.
That's really true. Yeah. I think this sort of what really draws me to the story is the fact that it's about the magic of storytelling itself. And mm-hmm. how no matter how much control you think you have, your audience will be seeing something very different. Something that might even go completely against what you're telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, whoever listens is involved in imagining it as much as you. So whether this is by inserting an Indian instead of a Native American or even Alexandria's little moments of taking control of the story, she's like, it can't be my father, he's dead. And then suddenly Lee Pace becomes a masked bandit.
Yeah.
Or she says, no, this character doesn't die. Or
Or she becomes then also a character in the story because he is depressed and lets everybody die. And she's like, no, I'm saving everyone, right?
Yeah, it's so charming.
And it's very, very cute. And the set design and the costumes are amazing. Amazing.
It's such a treat. And I think that's another thing that's really beautiful is the fact that you're taken to all these historical sites that you definitely recognize simply mm-hmm. from, you know, history books. And they're placed in such a strange spatial constellation that it creates a sort of magical landscape of the familiar, but it's sort of imbued with this mystery. Mm-hmm. And certainly that's how I felt.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, oh, there is a mystic and he says, follow him onto greener pastures. And they're standing in a desert and then the camera turns and suddenly they're in a green place. And, you know, it's like this fairy tale logic and you believe it. And it's in a way, it's a very simple story. Like there's this evil Governor Odious whom they have to, for some reason or other, all of them have sworn revenge against him. So they go on a quest and... But, you know, taken together, like the real life and the fantastical make quite a complex story. And that's really nice. And the way I think he shot it was like shooting ads. And then whenever he was somewhere, he was like, guys, come over. We were doing a scene. And then they moved to the next one and the next one. And so I was looking at the list when it came up afterwards. Oh, we shot on this location. I mean, it's really all over the world. And you see it. And I like that it's with so much, it's not CGI or anything. They have miniatures even. And I think that's really, it's done the film a lot of favors, I think.
Absolutely. I think this is also something that helps the film not age, mm-hmm. is the fact that there are no special effects that fall away. This is all... the magic of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this sort of element of planning and control in these visual narratives that are absolutely necessary, I think, to convey the sort of grandeur mm-hmm. of this tale. But also what really makes it magical and not accidental storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also really interesting because the girl who plays Alexandria, her name is Katinka Unaru. Yeah, Unaru. I hope I can read my handwriting. She is a young Romanian girl. I think she was like 6 or so when they started shooting. And for her, it's not acting. For her, it's like real. She's just there hanging out with this guy and he's telling her a story. And I think they also try to sort of encourage this by the way they shot it, you know, be very unobtrusive and so on. And it's a very naturalistic performance. I mean, sometimes I don't understand what she's saying, but it's a very naturalistic performance, like really. And this, I think this adds to your own, you know, willingness to be like a child with an open mind towards the story, mm-hmm. I feel.
Yeah, I think she is wonderful to watch. I really, really enjoyed her. And often I find kids very annoying in film. So, I think she did a fantastic job. I also heard that she was told that Lee Pace's character was not able to walk while filming, so she completely believed that.
Yeah, so she's absolutely in there, and it's really, it's excellent to see that. I think it adds a lot. And, you know, like we said, there are darker topics, you know, so it touches sort of suicide, but also I think it touches maybe on like immigration, because her family has immigrated into the US. And, you know, she has to translate for her mother, you know, as a lot of like second generation kids have to do. But then she just takes control of the story, i.e. she lies when her doctor asks the mother something, or the mother gives an answer and stuff like that. And of course, you know, the fact, starting with the fact that she's a child and she has to work in the orange groves at all, you know, stuff like that. I think it touches upon it. Mm-hmm. Although it doesn't always do a lot then with mm-hmm. it, but it's all in there.
Some people have criticized it for being more style over substance. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think a lot with Tarzan Singh, this happens quite a lot. I mean, he also did, like, for instance, like we said before, Mirror Mirror.
Yes, right.
Yeah, so I mentioned it before, but he did Mirror Mirror, which I think visually is amazing. The story is like, maybe they should have, you know, just waited for the next year and let Snow White and Huntsman do their thing first or whatever. And also, I think Immortals, of which I watched like 10 minutes and then I had to stop because it was terrible. But he's very, very much into style. So I think that's his priority. But I think here, style is also part of the story. And I also think the storytelling is actually strong enough to carry the film.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree. I don't really think that it's a weak or loose narrative. I think mm-hmm. it's very strong, and it leaves a lot of space for the audience to find themselves in the narrative alongside these two characters. And it's a very intimate film.
Yeah.
I feel.
But yeah, in a way it's intimate because they're sitting on his bed and mm-hmm. she's like, tell me the story. But then on the other hand, you have these epic vistas, you know, of, like you said, like ancient cities and everything. But it all fits together in a way. No? Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it, I have to say.
My God. Yeah, it made me cry again so much.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
my God.
It's good. I think I will definitely rewatch it. So I would say the fall is one for us.
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
Yes, very, very much.
Okay, so before we get to the end of the episode, is there anything that you're looking forward to, Manzi?
Gosh, actually, I don't know. I haven't really been checking.
Okay, so no. Manzi's like, oh no, I forgot.
Oh my God, I forgot.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I mean, I have something I'm looking forward to.
Yes, what are you looking
Because, for? I mean, I have to do it now because Andre wouldn't let us discuss it next time. No. I'm looking forward to Jumanji, The Next Level, because I really enjoyed the first Jumanji, which is sort of a sequel / reboot, whatever, of the Jumanji with Robin Williams. But now it's a computer game, not a board game anymore, and people get sucked into it, and then they become their avatars, and they have to, you know, play the game to get out again. And it's hilarious because you have like Dwayne The Rock Johnson is, you know, is it like the guy who plays him basically, or, you know, has him as an avatar, is like a scraggly teenager. So Dwayne Johnson plays a scraggly teenager. Or you have Jack Black as a teenage girl who's like obsessed with her phone, but he plays her not in a condescending way. There's actually a lot of character development, but it's also a hilarious, hilarious movie. I mean, when I saw that, I'm doing a review now instead of a preview. Anyway, like there were like groups of all ages in the cinema and they all were laughing so much. So I think it's like an excellent film for everyone. And the next one looks like it's going to continue that, and they're mixing it up a little bit with having new like real life characters who get sucked in. So the avatars are the same, like Karen Gillian and, you know, Johnson and Jack Black and Kevin Hart. But, you know, they're playing now like old men, like grandpas and stuff. And it looks to be hilarious again. So I'm actually really looking forward to that. Yes.
Fun upcoming week.
Yes. Find out if it was fun next week. I mean, in 2 weeks. Next episode. Yes, but what we're actually going to be talking about in the next episode is the new release, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? And our gem is TBD. So to, you know, yeah, not due to a lack of planning or anything. No, it's for the mystery, you guys. But anyway, to stay up to date with the podcast and also, you know, find out what our jam is going to be, follow us on social media where we're at One For You Pod. Manzi, thank you very much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure you will be back again.
See you soon.
Yeah, hear you next time. Bye.
Bye.